Good evening. I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey. With the help of Mel, K2 KEY, Paul, WS2N, Eric, KE2EJ, Rich, N2EO, Joe, WH2RYY. These are the guys who sign in frequently to the TechNet. We gather the clan. We all try to answer people's questions on subjects of space, ham radio, antennas, transmitters, receivers, transmission lines, all the complicated and slightly complicated stuff, and how to have more fun with this particular hobby. That's sort of what goes on here. That's what's been going on for going on 27 years, and we're all kind of surprised that it has lasted that long. A person signs into the technical net because he has a question or a comment by giving us his call letters, his name, because I'm so forgetful, and the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment for the net. A typical sign-in would sound like this, K2KEY, Mel, and yes. Do we have any check-ins? Give me a call letters and name at this time, KQLIW. I think that was a double. I think the person said Rich, but you'll have to, in fact, I'll listen on the input, and please repeat what you just said. The person who just signed in, please do it again. Very fine, Peter. I'm hearing you extremely well on the input, but I'm not hearing you through the machine. Either your audio is too loud and it's overriding your PL tone, or maybe the PL tone wasn't there. So I'm hearing you on the input very nicely, but you're not coming through the machine, Pete. Anyone else to check in besides Pete? Give me your call letters and name right now.
Hey, good evening all, K2KEY.
W-H-O-R-Y. Joe.
Yes.
Okay, so far we got Pete, Joe, and Mel. Anyone else?
WA2BDH, John, yes.
And John with a yes. The two yeses so far are Joe and John. Anyone else? And probably Pete. Anyone else?
Dick, WA2CDO, sensitive information.
And Andy with some information. Why don't you give us your information, Andy?
As an experiment, Eric and I were up at the repeater last week, and we changed the PL decoder back to the original GE that was originally installed from what we were using a ComSpec at the time. There might be some talk off on voice piece we each map out. If that happens, let me know. On the air. I'm actually going to somewhere right now, and I'm going to be off. But I hope it doesn't cause too much havoc, because we're trying to make a test here and see what's what. Just to let you know that, I think back to you, WHCDO.
Very fine, Andy. So we'll know to keep an eye on the PL decoder. You've got a new one in there, and maybe it's going to need some debugging and adjustment and whatever. Pete, WA2PAA, when you signed in, were you giving us a yes that you do have a question? Because you were the first sign-in. Pete, if you're there, go ahead. I'm listening on the input.
I do a question. You're copying me.
I'm copying you beautiful through the machine, through the input, but through the machine you're only half there. Try speaking softly, and maybe the PL won't be dropping out. I'm hearing your question, and the portions that don't come through, I'll repeat. You've got it, Pete.
Okay, thank you, Dick. I was listening about a month ago about CBN, and I don't think that 2 or channel 4 on the local antennas. There's a gentleman on that said they had a temporary antenna, but I think the frequencies are different. Can you tell me the frequencies and what kind of antenna I might need to get those? I'd appreciate it.
Very fine, Pete. and that time you didn't drop out at all, but your audio now is a little bit too low. So, Pete is trying to watch digital television, and channels 2 and 4 are troublesome for him, or not coming through at all. Channel 2, which is CBS, used to be 54 to 60 megs, Pete. Now with the new digital television, WCBS calls itself Channel 2, but they're really on UHF Channel 33. UHF Channel 33, which I'll have to do the calculation for you, but I think it's 580 or so megacycles. Channel 4, NBC, looking at my list, used to be on, let's see, I guess it was 64 to 72 or something. I think it was 64 to 72 was the frequency it used to be. What calls itself Channel 4 now, 4.1 and 4.2 and 3, really is UHF channel number 28. And yes, Eric, who works in broadcast for PBS, did tell us that both CBS Channel 2 and NBC Channel 4 are using their fill antenna. In other words, you could call it their standby antenna down at the lower altitude on the Empire State Building. The main antenna that they will eventually have on the mast on the top of the building will be greatly better when it goes there. But it's not going to go there for a good number of months. I think Eric estimated not until the end of the year. UHF, correction, digital television is a very complicated signal. When you look at it with a spectrum analyzer, it looks like what they call Bart's haircut. It's just filled up with digital information from the low end to the high end of the channel, and it looks like noise. And if you're getting a channel from, say, Connecticut or New Jersey or whatever that's on the exact same frequency, it can be rather easily interfered with. So what some people are doing is not only putting a good television aerial that covers UHF, and by the way, digital television now goes from Channel 7 reel, 176 megacycles, up to Channel 13 reel, I think it's 216 megacycles, as well as UHF, covering roughly 500 to 650 megs. So if you put a television aerial covering upper VHF and UHF on the chimney of your house, you'll get considerably better reception. And one of Eric's suggestions for a serious television watcher, let me drop, is to put a rotator on the antenna. Ordinarily, you wouldn't need a rotator because the actual television aerial is probably 75 degrees wide in its main lobe, and you can't possibly miss the Empire State Building with an antenna that's that wide. That's the good news in the old days of analog. Digital television, it has quite a bit of trouble with multipath, like if you're getting a reflection off of a water tower or something like that nearby. That can make it crash, depending on how recent is the design of your particular digital converter. Second of all, if you're getting a similar co-channel from, let's say, Connecticut or New Jersey, that can give it grief. Therefore, if you've got a rotator on the antenna, and the antenna is on, let's say, the chimney of the house or something higher if you've got it, I'm going to be mounting one at the 70-foot level of my tower. But with a rotator, minor changes in the angle of the antenna can make major differences as to the phase angle and whatever of how the multipath gets into the antenna and whether or not you can aim one of the deep notches in the pattern toward Connecticut and so on. So minor changes of the antenna aiming by way of a rotator can quite often make huge improvements. Unfortunately for CBS and NBC, I don't know of an easy way in which you can get them by another means. In the case of Channel 9, which is another difficult one for some people to get, WOR, if you go to Channel 5, you will, the Fox network, you'll find that the exact same programming is there. Just the channel numbers are reversed. 9.1 and 9.2 became 5.2 and 5.1 respectively. They're reverse positions, if you know what I mean. So, in the case of WWOR and Fox, by going to what is now called Channel 5, you can get those. But when it comes to CBS and NBC, I don't know of a backup technique. That's sort of what we know so far, Pete. Let me pass it back to you, Pete. Drag your feet in case other people that are smarter than I am, knowing about digital television, want to put in their 2 cents worth. W2PAA to take it. A little delay. K2RIW in the TechNet.
K2KEY.
Go ahead, Mel.
I was wondering, you took one of the TV set antennas that you have now and made a little modification, I guess, break off, get rid of the elements that covered low VHF. Would the antenna be, you think, more effective, or what else? What would happen, actually, to the conventional antennas that's been around for quite a number of years, that a combination, you know, low VHF, high VHF, and UHF, Dick, over.
Yeah, I see where you're going. You want to get rid of the very long bars, the ones that cover channels 2 through 6, because channels 2 through 6 on digital television are no longer being used. The analog low-power channels, they're still there on channels 2 through 6, but digital is not. Therefore, in theory, you could remove those long bars. I don't recommend you do that, because assuming the manufacturer of the antenna, Bell, has done a good job, he's made a reasonable impedance match across all of those frequencies when the whole antenna is there. You eliminate those low bars, and now you're changing the impedance that's seen by the feed point of that antenna everywhere. And if you're lucky, the upper VHF and UHF channels will not be changed, but he impedance matched it with those long bars. So, it's an interesting experiment. If you can take them off in a way that where you can put them back again, and that's the hard part. They're usually held on by rivets. And if you cut them off in some way, you're not going to be able to put them back. So I think there's a 50-50 chance you're going to lose, you're going to create a notch somewhere in one of the remaining channels because it was impedance matched with all of that low-frequency stuff there. Now, you see where I'm going on this one. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Yeah, that's K2KEY. Well, that's what I did. I had one laying here. I needed another antenna for, I said, gee, let me see what happens. I'll put up another antenna. I want another one. I have them in the attic, by the way. I've been there for many years for all the years that we've had television, actually, here in the house. I would say that those antennas have been in the attic, so they were in good shape, but I wanted one more, but I couldn't turn it correctly because the elements are too long. The old elements are too long to be able to turn it the other way, the V of the roof. So what I did, remember, because I wanted to stay in the attic, maybe I'm ashamed to be the only one then having an antenna on the blockhouse talking HI. Nobody has any here anymore. Everybody's on cable. So I just clipped those elements. I just broke them off, literally. I said, if it doesn't work, it don't work. Worked perfect, Dick. I got great reception on it. Of course, I was only looking for, I think, the UHF channels really on it. But I left the shorter elements, but broke off the longer elements and figured if it don't work, it don't work. But didn't seem to have any effect on it, over.
Good time, and it sounded like it worked. There's a catch, though, Mel, and that is Pete, who is asking the question. He lives out here in Huntington. He's 33 miles east of Empire State Building. You're way in there in Brooklyn, in Manhattan Beach, and my guess is you can almost stand on a ladder in your front yard and see the Empire State Building. So in your case, you could have a 15 dB notch in the antenna, and because the signal is so strong, because you're so close, with direct line of sight, you can get away with murder. So Pete's a little bit closer to a fringe area as far as digital television is concerned. But he's a ham radio operator, and he's got a tower in the backyard. So I'm guessing here. So therefore, he can put an antenna on the tower. So that's sort of what we know so far, Pete. WB2PAA in Huntington. Okay, I talked a little bit closer to normal amplitude. K2RIW, you got a Pete.
No question,
K2RIW. Okay.
amplitude of your PL tone or its frequency accuracy, Pete. Whenever you stopped talking, you were coming through the machine, and as you talked, you dropped out. So, that's a tough one. Only half of what you said came through. Pete is asking, does anyone have a recommendation for where to buy a good television aerial for over-the-air reception these days, digital television? Yes, Radio Shack sells a number of products, and I'm trying to remember what was the other brand name, another guy who signed in. I guess it was Joe. When we get around to Joe, Joe would tell us the brand name he bought, and I was over at his QTH, and he's quite pleased with it. He's getting quite a bit of television DX on it, in fact. Mel wanted to add some more words. Over to you, Mel, K2KUY, K2RIW.
So I was going to mention exactly what are they selling there that Radio Shack, you know, what is this so-called antenna that looks like a square? What exactly configure is it? Does it got an amplifier in it? What exactly are they marketing there, Dick? Over.
Okay, when I was in Radio Shack asking that question, they have a number of so-called indoor antennas, which I do not recommend in general for outdoor use. The indoor antennas, some of them have got switching networks, some of them got preamplifiers built in. But I did see a box on the store that I was in Monconkoma that looked like a more conventional antenna, the fishbone-like thing that you normally see on chimneys of houses for television reception in the old days. They sell a couple of those. But the square one you're talking about, the ones that look like they're very compact for indoor service, I don't recommend them outdoors. There is one that a number of people have used outdoors that is kind of compact, that looks like a log periodic. I'd love to know what the real performance of that is. In the case of television aerials, the gain claim is considerably worse, in honesty, than it has ever been in ham radio antennas. Ham radio antennas, a number of the brand names were fibbing like crazy, and as such, QST Magazine, for the last 10, 20 years, will not allow you to make a gain claim for the antenna that you're advertising in their magazine. I guess you could, they probably will reprint the pattern if you gave them the pattern. And a smart person can look at the pattern and say, yeah, I recognize that pattern. That's one with 12 dB of gain. It's got this number of degrees of beamwidth. But the gain claims were on ham antennas are pretty outrageous at times. Well, if you think that's outrageous, just look at the claims for the decibels of gain over isotropic or dipole on television aerials. Some of them are really way out in the blue. And they know what's going on, and that is many a naive person will look at all the possible brand names he can buy. He realizes that there's a performance per dollar type thing going on. He thinks, and he looks at the gain number and the dollar number, and he decides which one, how much he's willing to pay for. And so the manufacturers realize that, and they made great big gain numbers, which are way out in the blue. So you can't believe anything. If Consumers Report made a performance assessment of television aerials, I would sort of believe that. But from the manufacturer, no. Even the very respected brand names, I've looked at some of them, where you see the pattern that they gave you, and they see the gain number that they claim, and the pattern is a necessary but not sufficient. And if the pattern doesn't have it, there's no way within the laws of physics you can have the gain number that they're claiming. So it's really a terrible business. And right now, very few organizations other than Consumers Report, Consumers Union, cares or has the ability to really check this out. So it looks like your first step is Radio Shack, and hang in there, Peter. When we get to Joe, he'll tell us what brand name he bought, how much he paid for it, and how much performance he's got. Let me pass it back to you, Pete, for any other comments. WB2PAA, speak softly. Let's see if you come through the machine. K2RW, you got it, Pete.
Okay,
K2RW,
WB2PAA. No. I don't think I have any more, and I'll listen to see if Joe comes on and with some information, and I thank you very much. And 27 years is a great time, and I've been listening to you probably 20 anyway. So carry on, Dick and Annette, WB2C.
Well, you've been listening to the TechNet for 20 years out of the 27. Well, I thought you were a little bit smarter than that, Pete. I'm having fun with you. Hey, Joe, W-H-O-R-Y-Y, I know you've got a question, but first start off, what's your favorite brand name of television aerials? Because you're one of these guys that, when it comes to buying oil and buying television aerials, you research those things very well. You look at all the brand names and all the prices and whatever. So which one did you buy, Joe, and how many dollars and where did you buy it? W-H-O-R-Y-Y, K-2-R-Y-W in the TechNet.
The first thing I want to say is the guy's radio is way off frequency because he keyed up when Mel keyed up and he was extremely off frequency. That's his problem. That's why he's dropping out of the machine. I don't know which way he is, high or low, but it's now like about 2.5 to 3 KC off frequency from where he belongs. That's probably why the guy is not making the repeater all the time. He's chopping out because he's on the edge of the bandpass of the receiver. I've been noticing that for, I noticed that when keyed up on top of him, as it quite a high pitch heterodyne. So the guy might want to have his radio checked, make sure he's on 146.850, and if he is, then he's got something wrong with the frequency control that it runs the radio. That's my first comment.
We got your first comment, go, and go ahead with your second and third comment.
Okay. Since this is comment time, the antenna I own is a WineGuard HD 7698P, I believe, is the model number. You saw the antenna. You saw how high I have it above the ground. And if the gain claim is not what it says with the preamp and going through all the splitters I go through, I can get channel 7 out of New York with a plus 35 over S9 reading when I connect that to my R7000. So it may not have the gain, but it sure has a lot of signal coming out. That's signal going into one of the converters that's right next to my R7000. So I do have plenty of signal available to make it work on all the channels. I get, I'd say, about 90-95% reception all the time. Every once in a while, it'll drop out. But I have it about 30, 32, 33 feet up in the air. I got a mass mounted preamp, and it runs three TVs through a couple of splitters, and it works pretty good for him. And I'm 46 miles from Midtown Manhattan. Well, there you go.
Okay, Judge. Eric recognized. We're going to come back to you, Joe. Eric, go ahead and give us your words.
I really caught the end of that, so I just figured I'd announce myself.
Yeah, we're discussing now where to buy television aerials. Pete, WB2PAA, asked that question. He's also unhappy about the fact that in Huntington, with a rooftop antenna, he is not getting CBS and NBC, the channels that call themselves Channel 2 and Channel 4. And, Joe, I know you're getting an extremely strong signal on Channel 7 that you just told us about by way of the mass-mounted preamp and that WineGuard antenna. How many dollars did you pay for that antenna? How many dollars did you pay for the preamp? Where did you buy it? And, when you listen to what calls itself Channel 2, CBS, or NBC Channel 4, tell me how well they come into your house in Sayville, 40 miles up east of New York City. Now, the good news about Sayville is he's way down on the south shore. He has an almost overwater path between him and Empire State Building. The southern end of the island is relatively low-altitude land with nowhere near as much blockage. Up on the northern portion of the island where I live, I've got some pretty good size Long Island equivalent of mountains to the west of me. Channel 21 is mounted on one of them. Jane's Hill is mounted on another one. And so I have to look through those. And I'm getting spotty reception on CBS, the rooftop antenna, and occasional dropout on Channel 4. So how do 2 and 4 come into your QTH, Joe? W-A-2-R-Y-Y, K-2-R-I-W.
I'll say it again. The reception I get on all the TV channels in New York is about 90 to 95% reliability. In other words, there's only certain times, a very small percentage, that they'll actually start dropping out. Heavy rain that I've noticed, wind, moving the trees around, things like that. But in normal conditions, I get them very well. The lowest signal level I remember seeing on the R7000 coming out of the line that feed one converter on one TV in the same room, because my R7000, I believe, was about plus 20 over S9. So that's the weakest signal I get, maybe plus 13 or plus 20 over S9. The strongest one is plus 35 over S9. And I'm looking at the pilot carrier, that's 0.3094, below the bottom end of the band, so I'm going by as a basis. So I do get very strong reception on all the channels, very little dropout. The antenna was about $130, maybe a little more than that with shipping. You can find on the internet, if you just put in HD7698P, you'll find a couple of different manufacturers, distributors that sell it. I have a mass spanner preamp that was about $40 or $42, which is an AP8275P, I think they call that, the matching preamp. So that's what I got for the installation. Back to you, Dick, and then I'll ask my question.
Very fine, Joe. You answered all of our questions, and please proceed with your question.
Well, I actually have two of them, but it's sort of cheating. But one is a technical question, fairly technical, and the other one is just a simple yes or no, you're either going to know it or you're not. And I'll start with that one first. On the space EVA suits they wear, the comm radios in those suits, are those things monitorable down here? Like, are they in UHF, are they using microwave, something that's not monitorable from a typical Earth station?
To my knowledge, the space suits communicate on something like 280 megacycles. It's a upper, is that VHF? Let me think. Yeah, the upper end of the VHF band. Somewhere around 270, 280 megacycles. A number of amateurs have heard the spacesuit directly. So, obvious by the fact that a 5-watt Motorola handy talkie talking into a taped antenna against the window of the space shuttle when it's over northern Texas, 1,570 miles away, is easy to pick up on Long Island with the rubber duck out of the handy talkie. So once you've got real line of sight, the first 1,500 miles comes easy, as long as you're radiating, let's say, a watt of power. And you go through the mathematics of free space loss at VHF frequencies, and you'll confirm that. There's no real magic there. And, of course, it's a huge contrast. Here we are essentially handy-talkie to handy-talkie when astronaut Owen Garriott on space shuttle number 6 or 9, I think it was, when I listened to him back in 1985. He's 1,500 miles away, and I'm hearing him on a handy-talkie in the parking lot in Deer Park, dead full quieting, along with a whole lot of other people shouting to him. You take those same two handy-talkies, and you start in your front yard and have somebody walk away, and by the time they get a mile, you have trouble talking to them because of all the trees and houses and everything else that's in between, and Earth curvature. So, are the spacesuits monitorable directly? Without a doubt. And a number of amateurs have done it. Where do you find the exact frequency is the next question. Let me drop and see if anyone knows the exact frequency of the spacesuits used by the EVA operations for the astronauts. And by the way, even if you can hear it, because they're line of sight and you know the frequency, and I think it's an FM broadcast, bear in mind that even when the space shuttle or the International Space Station flies directly overhead, a most desirable path, from acquisition of signal on one horizon to the launch, you know, on the other horizon, is only going to be something like 15 minutes. So it's not going to be a real long reception, and the majority of the passes are just barely skirting your horizon, so to speak. So you're not going to get a whole lot of information that way. And there are times when they're doing a spacewalk, and for 10 solid minutes, they don't say anything. And, of course, Murphy's Law dictates that that's going to happen when the space station is flying overhead. Now, does anyone know the exact frequency of the spacesuits that the astronauts use? Give me your call letters right now, K2LIW.
Kilo Delta 2, Bravo Delta.
Go ahead, John. I thought you'd know.
Well, offhand, I don't know, but I know there's a magazine called Monitoring Times, which likes to publish a lot of that information that's been published quite a bit in the past. So I would imagine a Google search on space EVA frequencies probably bring that up pretty quickly. And as far as I understand, the modulation is AM, as in aviation communications. And I have one other comment on television antennas also. K2RW from KD2BD.
Very fine, John, and I can sort of see why they would make it AM. The advantage of AM is that it doesn't have a strong capture effect, so that if two astronauts talk simultaneously, and if, I think they got two separate frequencies for the two suits, but if there's a third astronaut out there, the problem is that they only got two frequencies, and occasionally somebody will be talking on top of each other. With AM, you stand a chance of hearing both conversations. With FM, it's much less likely. So just like with aviation, I can see how they would probably use AM. Go ahead with your other piece of information, John.
Okay, so this goes back to what Mel was asking earlier about cutting elements off a television antenna. I would suggest not to do that. Many of these log periodic designs, the long elements cover both the low VHF and the upper VHF spectrum. On low VHF, they act in a half wavelength mode, and on upper VHF band, they act in a 3/2 or 1.5 wavelength mode. So if you cut those long elements off, you're not just decreasing the low end response of the antenna, you're also decreasing the high end response. K2RW from KD2BD.
Interesting. And I guess I was a little bit suspicious that something like that could be happening. For a person in a fringe area, 40 miles out, cutting off the elements, if you create notches in the remaining frequencies, you'll know about it pretty fast. Whereas Mel, being as close to, he is in the heart of New York City, in one of the five boroughs. And so him still getting reception on a particular brand where he cut off the longer elements isn't giving us complete freedom to go do that and not worry about what will happen. So thank you for that information, John. Now back to you with your real question, Joe, W2RYY, K2RYW in the TechNet.
Okay, this has to do with your favorite subject, digital television, or at least one of them. What I've noticed in the past couple of weeks with the weather changing, getting very hot in the day, and it cools down rather quickly at night, you get some of these, I guess you'd call them coastal ducting up and down the coast. I guess that's where it's coming from. And what I'm noticing on some of the channels is some of the frequencies are not the same. It's apparently co-channel interference, and on some channels it's they're very close, maybe a couple of cycles apart, and they seem to have less of an effect of knocking each other out. Where both signals are there, it'll drop the reception, make the reception get to a point where you don't hear it. One frequency in particular is frequency for channel 13. If I tune to that frequency, which I believe is 210.3094, I can distinctly hear about a 300 hertz pitch of something else that's there. And as that pitch goes higher and lower in, like, I guess the background amplitude, you call it, I can watch the TV signal at the same time. The signal meter will actually start going to, like, half scale, and sometimes it'll actually drop it out. So there's something else out there, and that particular frequency out by me that I can receive in time that will actually take channel 13 and just knock it right out where you can't see it at all.
Fascinating. Now, the day you had me tuned to a couple of specific frequencies with my R7000, where I was listening to the pilot tone of a digital television channel, I was hearing what I thought was a 6 hertz beat note on the pilot, like I was hearing something simultaneously. I watch channel 50, for instance, from New Jersey, so I know I'm getting a reasonable range as long as the UHF television channel is putting out some steam. Although, for all I know, 50 is also coming from Empire State Building. Eric will tell us that one. But a 300 hertz offset from, say, for instance, something coming up the coast from Delaware, Maryland, or Virginia, I'm having trouble believing there could be that much frequency error unless there's that much intentional offset set by the frequency assignment. Wonder if you got some words on this one, Eric. KE2EJ, if you're there. K2RIW in the TechNet.
K2RIW, KE2EJ. As of this date, there is no offset such as we experience in analog television. offset, of course, is to identify where co-channel is coming from. Depending upon where you're located, you check on the map, and you see that, you know, another channel 13 up in Boston has a positive offset, which is 10 and that's 10 kilohertz off the carrier frequency. And then some places are minus, and what basically you can take the output of your video detector and put that into a frequency counter and find out where the offending station is. But in digital television, the way things are at the moment, there are no assigned offsets. The pilot is supposed to be the pilot plus or minus 5 hertz, and the whole concept of the exciters being driven by a GPS oscillator, which says that you're going to be pretty damn close to frequency, is something that will have been set up on a transmitter, especially in the day when they were moving both analog and digital. For example, channel 21, which was being driven by GPS on the analog transmitter, and also being driven by, you know, a 10 megahertz oscillator from the derived from the GPS for the digital, except the digital was set up at N plus 1, which is some weird number which I can't remember off the top of my head as far as the offset is concerned. It was to give enough space away from the sound carrier, the lower adjacent channel, so that the signal wouldn't be affected by, the digital wouldn't get affected by the spillover of the sound carrier, because a lot of the analogs would not only have the stereo, but they would also have the SAP, and they would also have, some of them would have the pro channel. 13 actually had pro channel up until June 12th, which New York 1 would use the pro channel as the IFB, they're going back. But those stations that were standalone, that, a lot of them used the internal oscillator to the transmitter. And as an example...
Repeater, timeout.
Okay, you did drop out for the last 20 seconds, and so I think you said that the N plus 1 offset that you're using right now to project the sound channel of the adjacent analog television, what's your guess, Eric, as to what is that in final frequency offset? 300 hertz that Joe is experiencing strikes me as a lot. With people using global positioning satellite method of disciplining their 10 meg reference oscillator at their broadcast center, I'd be amazed if under those circumstances a person could be more than 1 hertz wrong. So 300 hertz, I'm wondering if he's getting a birdie from something else. I'm having a little trouble believing that a broadcast station could be that much in error, but this N plus 1, give me a rough guess as to what you think the real frequency offset on your transmitter might be. In other words, 10 hertz, 1 kc, 10 kc. Over to you, Eric.
Something in the back of the line sticks around 300 or so hertz, but, you know, I'm in my driveway. Let me go upstairs and I can tell you exactly. I'll be back in a minute. K2RWK to the deck.
Oh-ho. 300 hertz, and he is seeing 300 hertz. So maybe you're seeing the real thing, Joe. As soon as Eric gets to his data package in his QTH, we'll hear more about it. Huh. So maybe it's real. And wouldn't you like to have a rotator where you could now specifically aim at these channels? And out of curiosity, Joe, during some of these so-called band openings, extended ground waves and super refraction we get early in the morning and whatever, what is the approximate best digital television DX you have experienced so far? From HURYY, KQRYW.
That's an easy one. WUND from someplace in the eastern part of North Carolina on channel RF channel 20. How's that for distance?
Beautiful distance. How long was that channel in there? How long ago? In other words, was it a month ago, and did you hear it for 4 solid hours? Over to you, Joe.
I've heard that one a couple of times already, and their co-channel was WTXX in Waterbury, Connecticut. Now, being I'm seeing both of them completely off the side of the antenna, it's a pretty good fight, because I can see channel 20 all the time as far as I can tell there's something there, but I never get it at all. I will be able to rotate the antenna within the next month, give or take. I have the hardware to do that now. Just arrived this week, and I just ended up putting it, physically putting it together, which namely is another tripod. So that's coming within a month. I'll have it all assembled and have it up there. That's a very weird experience, and the funny thing is I don't get any of the other channels from North Carolina that are digital, because I looked them up on their website, and I could not physically see any of the other channels, like a channel 23 and a couple other various channels. They're probably either code channel or something that's up here that completely takes it out, and that was that. But channel 20 apparently is so weak that it's coming up from the north of me, that when this other station from North Carolina comes in, it just takes it out. So that's pretty good. From Washington, D.C. already, I've seen stuff from Baltimore. I think I've seen the eastern shore of Virginia on channel 16. So I got a whole list of these things I've been keeping so far when I get a new channel. So I'm getting there. But I know that when you get this 70-foot antenna up on the tower, or get it up 70 foot, you're just going to blow the record I have completely away. You're going to get copying signals all over the place. But the heart of my question is what I've been actually curious of, since I am seeing a 300 hertz difference apparently on at least channel 13, and I know there's one other channel, I should have wrote it down so I remember what it was. There's another one that had a slightly different pitch that was actually a little higher. The heart of the question is, do you think as far as digital television reception, would digital reception in period would suffer more by having the two carriers inherently very far apart in frequency, or having both carriers basically sync to the same source with them just about on the same frequency, except the phase shift?
Yeah, John, good question. As soon as Eric arrives, I'm sure he can give us some words on this. When there is true co-channel interference, and even if there was 0 hertz of offset on the pilot tone of two separate channels sharing the same frequency, as the second channel comes along, and I'm going to pick a number, is 10 dB weaker than the channel you want to listen to, it is my guess that most of our digital converter boxes are going to have a lot of grief with that. And that's with 0 hertz of offset, and you're sort of asking the question, does it get better or worse when there is a 6 hertz, a 60 hertz, or a 300 hertz difference in frequency? Does it get better or worse? I'll bet you it's still equally as bad. Let's see if Eric's got some words on this one. KE2EJ, hope you're back on the air. K2RIW.
K2RIW, KE2EJ. All right. It's 338.0655 hertz. That's the adjustment, which makes it 5.08218 megahertz above the visual carrier of the NTSC, which is 22.967 kilohertz above the normal pilot frequency. So there you go. That's the number. What was the actual question that you asked? I didn't really quite get that because I was focused on this.
Okay, you were doing that previous research. And the real question that Joe's asking, and I'm modifying the question a little bit, is that if you have co-channel interference, so which you want to watch channel 13, and because of what Mother Nature is doing with propagation or the way your antenna behaves, assume you're getting channel 13 from Empire State Building at the same time you're getting it from Boston, if there is one in Boston. And if there were 0 hertz of offset between the two digital television channels, I am guessing when the undesired signal is 10 dB weaker than the desired, I'll bet you very few digital converters can tolerate that. I think you're going to start getting bit error rate up the kazoo. That's my guess. And Joe's question is, when you find the threshold of how much weaker the second signal can be, does life get better or worse if there is a frequency offset of, say, 6 hertz, 60 hertz, or 300 hertz? Does the threshold of tolerability of the co-channel interference change significantly with frequency offset? and how many dB down in any of those cases does the undesired signal have to be, and a fifth generation converter can still tolerate it, if you know. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
K2RIW, K2J. Well, the interesting thing about digital television is that we traditionally think of RF carriers as a bad thing in terms of if you've got a carrier that's exactly, say, at 5425 megahertz, and you have another one coming in at 5425, who wins, you know, which one is stronger? And in digital television, those kind of rules don't sort of stand anymore because it all depends upon the symbols themselves, whether or not the receiver is going to differentiate one symbol from another. If, say, for example, the symbol time of one station is exactly 92 nanoseconds displaced from the other station, the fifth generation DTV receiver is probably going to pick the one that comes first. So depending upon the actual timing, and then it decides to lock up to that and separate the sync from that, and it's more complicated than that because we also have the trellis that's occurring. So it becomes a matter of timing as to which one you will actually be able to pick up, because in essence, the pilot really is irrelevant. You don't need the pilot for DTV to work. So it's a matter of, if you think of it as time division multiplex, and you can force your equalizer to pick one or the other, you in essence will be able to switch between both stations even though they're on the same frequency. And that's, by the way, one of the things that come into play in distributed transmission. Whereas the actual RF carrier signals are exactly the same frequency, which you would expect a heterodyne to occur, but the concept of reception is based on symbol time.
So there's no easy answer for how many kilohertz of offset creates grief, or how many decibels of difference in amplitude creates grief. It's a matter of timing, so it's a kind of a time division multiplex phenomena, almost, is what I'm getting out of this stuff, Eric. No easy answer. I'll be amazed if you don't get occasional dropouts if the undesired signal is only 10 dB weaker. Joe and I have both watched our so-called field strength indicator that's part of the digital converter. We've watched it jump up and down tremendous amounts. I can see it go from the middle of yellow to the bottom of red in 1 second. I know darn well the signal did not change in amplitude that fast. I am sure that the converter lost some kind of synchronization. The bit error rate climbed to a very high number, and I think part of what's being displayed as a signal strength indicator really is bit error rate, is my guess. And so when I try to watch CBS, for instance, during a 60 Minutes program, my converter works 65% of the time, so to speak, and the other 35% of the time it's a complete dropout, and the signal strength indicator is jumping all over the place. So I know I'm getting something like co-channel or multipath reception, which is giving me a lot of grief out here in Huntington with a rooftop antenna. You might have some further comments on all this, Eric. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
K2RIW, K2J. Well, don't forget that the receiver is between 0 and, say, 40, or between the area of red, is really the ADC of the receiver. Okay, and that's not the relevant part about whether or not you're going to pick up a picture. When you finally get higher than that, you're really reading bit error rate, not signal strength. So you can actually have a weak signal strength and a bit error rate that's acceptable enough for the demodulator to actually make you a picture. You can be watching something, and if you're on the south shore, you'll see a lot of variations. Why? Because the plane's taken off from Kennedy Airport, And that bouncing up and down that you're seeing is going to be the end result of multicast for the most part. Even if your antenna wiggles a little bit, you'll see a difference in those numbers simply because the equalizer is going to have to move and change according to the timing of what's coming in, so to speak. When you talk about multicast, what we're really talking about here is the same symbol occurring at a different point in time. Whereas that it may not be enough to, say, add and subtract the signals, because don't forget, these signals are really kind of noisish type of signals that's randomized. It actually has a random number generator that's being involved in it. And how those multipath changes, especially if it's a moving vehicle like an aircraft, it may actually go from zero time to, say, 100 nanoseconds and back, depending upon the angle of reflection, where the receiver is, how high the airplane is. There's lots of different things that come into play besides just a straight path between your transmitting antenna and your receiving antenna. So, it's not an easy call when you're working blind, but if you actually have a device like I have that gives you the result of what the taps to the equalizer is doing, you can actually tell, and you can see the effects of Doppler of a moving target occurring. So, it's really a tough call to answer. K2RIW, K2JI.
Got one more question on this one, Eric. If I had the exact same channel, exact same digital television program coming into my antenna, into my digital converter, and I could inject a second copy of the exact same thing, and I could offset it in time from zero to some number of nanoseconds, what's your guess as to the amount of differential timing that is likely to give grief? Would 1 nanosecond or 13 nanoseconds, how many nanoseconds of delta in time of the identical program is likely to say, have digital converter say, I give up? Over to you, Eric.
Actually, a number of studies that have been done that give some precise value. If we're not talking about multipath, and we're talking about, just let's say we're doing it in a laboratory, we're going to take two signals and stick one into a delay line, okay? If we're both at zero, we're in big trouble, actually, because of the mixing effects that occur there. As we move towards, I think it's 40 nanoseconds, the bit error rate will increase to the point where you get nothing. And as you move past that point, you head towards 92 nanoseconds, which is the actual thermal time, we then start to switch over to the other source. So if you had one source which had, say, the number one in the picture, and the other source which had number two in the picture, we would actually find the receiver switching from one to the other and back to the other every 44 nanoseconds, something like that. I forget exactly what the number is, but there is that whole concept. A number of papers have been written on it, about it, simply because of the concept of distributed transmitter sites. So the concept is to create digital television use.